Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. I just saw you grabbing your tooth again.
I know. Let's not talk about it. My teeth are clean. Okay, but... Okay.
Clean, but still...
Sensitive.
Are you using Sensodyne?
I am.
I hear it's recommended by all dentists.
Yes, they actually gave me a tube.
Oh, excuse me. Mm-hmm.
They said, we have a gift for you. And I was like, for me?
And then they handed it to you and you're like, oh, I'm 80 years old.
And I'm old.
This is for your dentures, ma'am.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if you have dentures. I'm not making fun. I can't wait to have dentures, to be honest. I just think it's so low maintenance.
Yeah.
And people who get veneers, it's like, sign me up for that.
Yeah.
Just... I have really soft teeth, so I've had more root canals in my 38 years of life. 38? Am I 38?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Than I would care to admit, mm-hmm. but, like, why do we need these teeth? Like, just give me stubs.
Chompers.
That I can...
Just give me some chompers that I don't have to...
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Too much work, I say.
So, we're back together again in the closet.
Back in the closet. And we're still using one microphone. So, you know, if you didn't like last week's episode, I'm gonna say that this one's probably not for you. But hey, listen to it anyways. Mm-hmm. So, did you know that October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month?
I did know that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of awareness in October.
There is. Another one is pregnancy and infant loss awareness. Breast cancer awareness?
Breast cancer, but I think now they're making it just all cancer awareness.
Okay, all cancer. Okay, let's just be very aware this month.
Yeah.
Okay? Let's just be aware.
I'm aware. Are you aware that I'm aware that you're aware?
I have been aware that you're aware that I'm aware.
Okay.
So, don't be rude to people, because people are dealing with things that you know nothing about, and just be nice, okay? And that really applies to every month, but like, in the month of October, be aware.
thank you for that.
thank you. I should give a TED Talk. I am a great speaker. So, I'm going to forgo my ghosts. For just a minute.
Okay.
Don't worry. They're coming back. But I want to tell you a story about a young college student who didn't get the chance to live out her dreams because someone in her life lost control of themselves and shut it all down for her, unfortunately. And, you know, we've done domestic violence before, but not about someone so young. So, Yardley Love. Have you heard of her?
The name sounds familiar, but I don't know the story.
She was born July 17th, 1987 in Baltimore, Maryland. I don't know why that was hard for me to say. But she grew up in nearby Cockeysville, Maryland, which is like 20 minutes away from Baltimore, with her mother, her father, and her older sister, Lexi. Now, her best friend growing up called her Yards.
Aww.
And I was like, when I was... You know, I always think of people's names and, like, what it's, like, what you would call them for short.
Right.
You know? Like, when people name their kids Apothecary or something like that. I'm like, hey, Apoth, you know, are you coming to lunch with us? Like, what do you call them for short? But I just thought Yards was so cute. And she called her friend Kath. So, but she was also really close to her sister Lexi, as most sisters are close, you know? But even though they were close, they were really different personality-wise.
Aww.
And that showed in the differences of the sports that they chose to play. Lexi was in tennis.
Oh.
And Yardley played lacrosse.
Oh.
So her mom described how she was not afraid to charge into a group of oncoming opponents.
That is a tough sport.
Yeah, and the contact sport just really fit her personality. And I can't tell you anything about lacrosse. I just know sticks be flying. That's all I know.
Right.
That's all I know. But her family and friends described her as funny and easygoing, and they said that most strangers were surprised at how relaxed and friendly she was, given how beautiful she was.
Oh.
You know, some people find beauty intimidating, and you see a beautiful person, and you're like, oh, I don't know. But she was so warm and inviting that she really just put people at ease. And she was silly. She was really silly. People loved how she didn't take herself too seriously.
Aww.
She was always making fun of herself, made people laugh, and that made people feel relaxed and at ease. I think we all know someone like that.
Yeah.
And you leave them feeling, man, it's just, it's so easy to be with them.
Yeah.
Like, it's easy to be around them. There's some people that suck your energy.
Right.
And there's some people that
make you refreshed.
Make you feel, you know, refreshed.
Yeah.
And, like, filled, you know,
right.
Like they fill you back up. Yardley's dad was actually diagnosed with cancer when she was just in the 7th grade.
Aww.
And despite how sick he may have been, he attended all his girls' games, both Lexi and Yardley. Her mom explained in a documentary that the coaches would let her drive right up to the field because he wasn't really in any condition to, like, walk long distances. So they let her pull right up and, you know, watch from the car. But sadly, even though he fought for so long, her dad ended up dying of cancer when she was a freshman in high school. And that really changed the dynamic of her family.
Mm-hmm.
Not for the obvious reasons, but it cemented this closeness between her and her mother and her sister. And it really did tie them closer together. And they had to lean on each other more than ever. And Yardley vowed to attend the University of Virginia, which was where her father went. She really wanted to play lacrosse there.
I love that.
And by her senior year of high school, she got that call. The coach of the lacrosse team at UVA said, "You're in, kid. Get in the game." And she was ecstatic. Her mother described it as it was like every holiday, like, rolled into one. And this was Division I, and it was a dream, and it was no joke. So it was an amazing opportunity for her. So in 2006, she set off on that dream to attend the University of Virginia and majored in political science with the hopes of eventually going to law school and becoming an attorney.
Nice.
She quickly fell in love with Charlottesville, Virginia,
mm-hmm.
where the university was located. She made lifelong friends, she joined a sorority, and she found love.
Oh.
She started dating a guy named George Hughley. They met in Spanish class her sophomore year and were friends for a bit before they ended up dating in 2008. He was also recruited to play lacrosse for UVA, and he was also from Maryland, though he actually grew up in Chevy Chase, Maryland, which was about an hour away from her hometown. But they didn't know each other before they went to school.
Okay.
So since they both played lacrosse, they saw a lot of each other due to just how tight-knit the men and women's teams were. You know, they were on the same practice and game schedule.
Right.
Which makes me think of when I played basketball in high school. It was kind of the same thing with the guys' basketball team. We would travel out, you know, to games together. We would see each other at practices. And so you just get close with people. George came from a well-to-do family. He went to an all-boys private school, which really fostered that college prep slash athlete mentality. And that's really the path he was focused on in high school, much like Yardley. So he was very ambitious too. But by senior year of college, Yardley and George broke up. Hmm. She was like, listen, I don't have the resources to give you in this relationship right now. And she wanted to focus on, you know, finishing up school, mm-hmm. finishing up her last season of lacrosse and getting into law school. And she was really, you know, had her nose to the grindstone at that point.
That's a lot to
It's a lot.
Handle.
And she was so close to graduating. But tragically, she would never see the day.
Oh my gosh.
Because on May 3rd, 2010, it would change the course of so many lives in the small community of Charlottesville. Now, Yardley was out with her friend that night, having a couple of drinks, having a good time, but she decided to head home early. Nothing of note happened that made her want to leave. She probably was just being studious and responsible. Mm-hmm. She had been balancing a lot, and a social life should be able to fit in there somewhere, right?
Right, absolutely.
So she walked home alone to her off-campus apartment on 14th Street Northwest. Mm. It was a couple hours later when her roommate ended up getting back home because her and her roommate were out together. Okay. She left early and her roommate stayed. So she got back home and she wanted to go in and just say hi to Yardley and probably catch up with her mm-hmm. on what happened after she left. She approached the open door to Yardley's room, but instead of finding her maybe reading or studying, as she expected, she was already asleep. Hmm. At least, that was her first thought. But that instantly turned to dread when she started to see blood on the floor.
Oh, no.
And on the bed.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm not sure what she could have been thinking right about now, because she slowly approached Yardley, who was laying on the bed. Did she fall? I mean, like, did she get home drunk, pass out, you know, on the bed? What in the world? Like, why is there blood everywhere? But when she approached her friend and moved her hair away from her face,
oh no,
she saw more blood all over the side of her head and on the pillow she was laying on. And as she backs away, she then sees a huge hole in Yardley's door. Like the size of a basketball.
What?
Yeah. And this must have, like, freaked her out.
Right.
And she's like, okay, this is not, like, what I thought it was. So, moments later, at around 2:15, her roommate called 911. 2:15 a.m. Now, I didn't hear the 911 call. But from the sounds of it, when the dispatch first got the call, they were probably thinking a case of drunken college student passed out after a night and now she's unresponsive. I'm not sure what the roommate said, but that's kind of what they thought they were responding to.
Okay.
But when first responders arrived on the scene, they could immediately tell that this was not an accidental situation here. They saw the gaping hole in the door. They noticed blood spatter on the side of her bed, on the sheets, blood on her pillow, and it appeared that there had been a struggle. Oh. Like, it wasn't super untidy, but they could see, like, points of disturbance in the room. Now, paramedics worked on her for a bit, but she was gone.
Yeah.
So to piece together what could have happened here, investigators began going door to door in the apartment complex because, as unfortunate as the situation may have been, they did have the advantage of proximity, right? Surely someone would have heard a struggle at that late hour.
Right.
And someone did.
Oh.
The girl that lived in the apartment below Yardley said that she was sitting on her couch in her living room the night Yardley was killed, and she remembered hearing someone going up the stairs to the apartment above. Now, if you've ever lived in an apartment, you know the sound of someone walking up the stairs right by your door.
Exactly.
Like, you just know these sounds. So, she heard someone walking up the stairs. Shortly after that, she hears a loud crash and commotion and banging around. Shortly after that, she hears someone coming back down the stairs. And naturally, she's like,
yeah.
So she gets up and she goes over to her kitchen window and she looked out to see who's being rude at this late hour. And she sees a tall male, kind of stocky, white t-shirt walking away from the building. And she's just like, ugh. So she relays all this to the police, and they didn't know it yet, but they'd soon figure out just who fit that description. Oh. Sharon Love, Yardley's mom, got a knock on her door about 6 a.m. the next morning, and they delivered the notification that absolutely no parent can even imagine getting.
So the 911 call was at 2:15.
Yeah.
And her mom wasn't notified till 6
a.m.
Wow.
I know. That I thought that too. And I just thought,
I mean, wow. 4 hours, but
yeah.
You can say it's just 4 hours, but that's a long time when.
I think so too. I mean, they knew who she was.
Yeah.
Immediately. I mean, it's not like they were trying to figure out who they had and.
Oh, man.
I know. So she got that notification, and you know, she recalled hearing them telling her the words.
Right.
But it was not registering. She was like,
yeah, how does it?
Like, la, 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 la.
Yeah.
You know, like
Charlie Brown. Wah, 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 wah.
Exactly. When news spread to everyone else that morning, because, you know, this is a small town, the campus and the surrounding community were devastated, obviously, that this could happen to a fellow student.
Right.
Not just any student, a good, responsible, and studious student who was in her own home
right.
at the time. So, it's not like she was in some back alley doing something weird.
Right.
Now, much of the time, as we know, when things like this happen in a small community, people are standing on the corner going, you know, who could have done this? Like, I don't, like, but not this time. Not this time. Very soon, people were talking about George, Yardley's ex-boyfriend. When her friends and family met George, they really liked him. Because on paper, he was a catch. Mm-hmm. I told you, he was from, you know, a respectable upbringing. He was ambitious and outgoing. And he was loyal to his sport of lacrosse, just like Yardley. And I say it like that because Division I sports mm-hmm. in college is a huge deal. It's right. practically a full-time job. You know, you spend hours a day at practice, then you have games, some of which you travel to, all while maintaining, like, an excellent GPA and trying to have some social life. So, yeah, he was out there doing it, just like she was, and that's respectable. But George, like most college students, liked to drink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that college age.
Right.
And when he drank, he was kind of a douchebag.
Wow.
Not kind of.
Mm-hmm.
He was a huge douche. Mm-hmm. One of those people that you do not want to be, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
like, oh, is Chip Smith going? Is George Glass going?
Uh-huh.
I'm not going then.
Right.
Because you never know what they're going to say or do, and their presence makes you uncomfortable.
Right.
Like, you just feel like it's
he's
going to be
that
trouble.
Sucks the life out
exactly.
of you.
Exactly. He would get really controlling of Yardley when he was drunk, and he would want to know where she was, who she was with.
Mm.
You know what I'm going to say. When she's going to be done.
Yeah.
All the telltale domestic, intimate partner violence signs. And when she wouldn't answer a text or call, he would continue to call and text incessantly. Now, one evening, Yardley was walked home by one of George's teammates, a kid named Gavin Gill.
Hmm.
And George lost his ever-loving mind over this.
Oh,
he immediately thought that they hooked up or something happened between them. And I've seen no reports to substantiate that at all. Like, I don't know if anything ever happened between them. I don't know if we will ever know, but it was likely some just innocent walk home. But George wasn't having it. Mm-hmm. He broke in to Gavin's apartment and beat the crap out of him while he was sleeping.
Wow.
Hit him about the head and the face.
Oh my gosh.
This kid was badly injured. He had to have a CT scan to, like, assess the damage. And this incident was never reported to police.
Why? Why not? Why?
Well.
Why?
I don't know. You tell me. From the sounds of it, it was never even reported to the school or the lacrosse coaches. Because I didn't find any evidence that he suffered any consequence over this attack. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So George was bad news. And it wasn't just like the talk of the town. Police were starting to suspect George because of this handwritten note they found in Yardley's room.
Okay.
So the note read, quote, "I cannot describe how sorry I am for what happened this past weekend. I am horrified with the way I behaved and treated you. I'm scared to know I can get that drunk to the point where I cannot control the way I behave or act.
Oh my gosh.
I am horrified to think that I was using physical force to keep you in my room. I am so sorry." End quote. It also goes on to say that he promises it won't happen again and that he wants to talk to her when she's ready to do so.
Oh.
Well, the police wanted to talk to him.
Yeah.
They're like, well, we'll talk. And they went and got his booty up at an early hour. So they could tell he had just woken up that morning when they went to get him. They said they wanted to talk to him about an assault and would he come down to the station and speak with them. So he went with them, no question. Lena, I'm going to tell you right now. If someone, the police, showed up to my door
right
at a stupid AM, haven't had my coffee yet, even if I had had my coffee and they said, we want to talk to you about an assault. Will you come down to the station with us? I'd have at least 5 questions.
Okay.
Why me?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Can I get my coffee? Mm-hmm. Can I have a cigarette on the way? I'd like to speak to an attorney. Right. Why
Do
me?
I need to put my clothes on?
Why me? No, I would leave my clothes off and say I'm a nudist.
I'm a nudist.
But I promise you I'd have questions and I wouldn't go without asking questions.
No.
Okay. I can tell you that much.
Right.
Anywho, George rides with them to the Charlottesville police station and sits down with a female detective who starts asking him about his day the day before. So the day Yardley died, like leading up to her death. He said he played golf with his parents. He went to dinner. He went to a bar afterwards. And then he went to talk to Yardley that night, and he was about to elaborate on that when the detective interrupted and said, who's Yardley?
Uh-oh.
If you're a true crime junkie, you know what she's doing here.
Uh-huh.
They haven't mentioned Yardley at all.
Uh-huh.
And he's bringing her up on his own.
Okay.
And so they want to delay, like, what he's really there for as long as they can. So this whole, who's Yardley?
I love that.
Totally brutal. So he says, oh, she's my former girlfriend. And the other detective's a guy. He goes, why former girlfriend? And he's like, oh, well, we broke up because she got jealous. She found a text in my phone from another girl and we broke up.
Right.
But I think we all know that's a load of hogwash.
Yeah.
Because we know, just as police did, about the note he wrote apologizing for his behavior that one night. And that's why they broke up. So let me tell you about that night that he was talking about in the note. So 3 months earlier, he had had a party at his apartment. He got so drunk that she was trying to leave his room and he pinned her down.
Oh, no.
And when she tried to leave his room, he pinned her down on the bed. And partygoers, over loud music, over talking, over, you know how loud those situations can be. They heard screaming cries for help coming from his room. So when they went in, they saw George straddling her on top of his bed, and he was choking her.
Oh my with Lord. With a house full of people.
Exactly. So it took multiple people to peel him off of her. And with that, there were multiple witnesses of what happened. Mm-hmm. So after that night, Yardley went home to stay with her mom for a few days, get some distance. She didn't want to talk to him. She just wanted to forget about it. Her and her mom thought about filing a restraining order, but actually in Virginia, at that time at least, you couldn't file a restraining order against someone who wasn't either a spouse or a domestic partner. Like, you had to be living with the person.
Oh, that's silly.
It is silly. So, yeah. And Yardley didn't want to tell the coaches about the assault. And pretty much wanted to just kind of forget it. You know, this is the thing about victims mm-hmm. and often why they don't report assaults, sexual or otherwise. Mm-hmm. They're often subjected to re-victimization, as we know. I mean, mm-hmm. the coaches will go to the school. The school will likely want a formal statement. Then they'll want to get the police involved. They'll likely encourage her to press charges. Then his family and friends will, you know, who knows who else might turn on her and her family for going and getting him in trouble. Maybe there will be hearings and court dates and, you know, sometimes the processes that we have in place to protect victims or get justice for our victims mm-hmm. are the same things that deter people away from, you know, reporting these crimes because they just don't want to deal with that right. whole thing. They don't want to relive it mm-hmm. and go into these long processes. And I think that's kind of what Yardley's thing was. She was involved in that lacrosse community. She thought, you know, he was just drunk. You know, victims make excuses for their abusers, and she just didn't want to do it. So back into the interrogation room, George tells detectives that Yardley came over to his house after that whole assault mm-hmm. incident. Well, he didn't tell them about the assault.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But he said, yeah, she came over to my house. She was drunk and she was angry about this girl that she had heard I hooked up with one of her sorority sisters. I don't know if it was true or not, but anyway, she whacked him with her purse. She, you know, whacked him around with her purse. And he's like, she totally hit me. She assaulted me. You know how...
Okay, but did this really happen or is just
this? No, this really did happen. No, this really did happen. Because it was substantiated, and I'll tell you in a minute. So she whacked him a couple times with her purse, and he said that's why he went over to her apartment to talk to her that night. Because she apologized for it, and blah, 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 blah. So he wanted to talk to her about it. He still doesn't know she's dead, by the way, this whole time. Like, this whole time they have still not revealed that. They're Why here for, exactly. a bit for her.
Okay.
Police never found Yardley's phone the night she was killed.
Right, okay.
They didn't find her phone. They didn't find her laptop. And they were thinking, what college-age student doesn't have these items?
Right.
Well, the explanation for that was that the night she went over and whacked him around with her purse, her lipstick flew out, her wallet flew out, her phone flew out, and all this stuff flew out of her purse.
Oh.
And she eventually got everything back.
Oh.
Like, he brought everything back to her, except her phone.
Oh.
And he swears that he didn't have her phone.
Okay.
I think he had it, because he was controlling. So she had been using her laptop.
Okay.
To communicate with people. Since then. And it was like a couple of months.
Oh, man.
And that was also missing from her apartment. Like I said, her laptop.
Right.
So where was that? George said, yeah, I mean, the night he went over there, he did take her laptop because he was mad at her.
Oh, my gosh.
And he said, yeah, I tossed it in a dumpster on my way to my apartment after I left.
What a jerk.
They're like, why, though? And he was like, I don't know. I just took it as collateral. In like a really douchey, like dude bro way.
Okay.
He admitted to drinking heavily throughout the day. He said he had multiple beers on the golf course. He had wine at dinner. He had beers at the bar.
Right.
He admitted to like over 22 drinks.
Oh my gosh. That day.
I can't even have 2 drinks.
No. No.
And I certainly couldn't drink throughout the day. Like, I cannot even identify with that. I can't even fathom it. So he must have been completely trashed.
Yeah.
How was he even functioning?
And he's already admitted that exactly. When he drinks, he can't control himself.
Exactly. And he said in his interrogation that they kind of tussled that night. And he said, I told her to go to sleep and I just kind of like tossed her on the bed, you know. But nothing violent occurred, oh, he no, says. Uh-uh. He said, however, he did say, well, I think I did kick her door in because it was locked. He's like, yeah. Because they asked him, how did you get into her room? And he's like, well, the front door was unlocked. Oh, but I think her door was locked. Like, her door was locked. So I think I did kick that in. Mm. And he ended up like pointing to his leg and he had like gashes all, like a big gash down his leg. Like, he really injured himself from kicking in her door.
Wow.
Oh, and he did mention that she had a bloody nose at one point during their friendly tussle that was not violent.
Right.
But it wasn't a big deal because he certainly didn't hit her or anything, he says. So there we have it. He's just admitted to being in her apartment and quote-unquote tussling with her the night she died. Mm-hmm. Okay? They still haven't told him that she's dead.
Right.
Okay. But he's given all this information. He severely minimized that encounter, but detectives are getting ready to drop it on him. And might I add, this whole time he never once asks about her.
Yeah.
He doesn't ask about her. He doesn't even ask why he's there.
Right.
It boggles my mind. Because he knew why he was there.
Yeah.
He knew why he was there.
He just wants to keep talking to see if he can talk his
way through it. Exactly. Which he's probably done most of his life. Now, the detectives leave the room for a minute. And when they came back, the female sat down and said, well, let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. She's dead. And George looked genuinely surprised. When the male detective said, I think you knew that already. He goes, no, I didn't. I never did anything that would kill her.
Oh.
Like, I don't believe it. He was cuffed and booked and charged with her murder. And he stomped on the floor. He was stomping. And he was like, tell me she's not dead. Tell me she's not dead.
Oh, my gosh.
And the female detective was like, I wish I could.
Right.
22 years old. Ugh. 22. And her life is done.
Right.
What about the laptop, though? Mm-hmm. Like, we still...
It's in the dumpster. He
threw it in the dumpster. When I learned about that, and I watched the interrogation tape, and I heard him say he took it because he was mad, no. There was something on it, wasn't there?
Right.
Well, investigators recovered the laptop from a dumpster near George's apartment, but it wasn't on the way. Like, he definitely had to deviate down a street, go around a block, dump it, then go to his apartment. So on the laptop, they found email correspondence, and this was what I was talking about earlier. They were exchanged between Yardley and George in the days after the purse lashing incident, which I still love. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
She emailed to apologize to him, and she was like, look, I'm sorry. That was stupid. And he wrote back, that was so effed up on so many levels.
Oh,
I should have killed you.
Oh, well, no wonder you wanted to get rid of that.
He literally said that. And she was like, you know what? I'm actually not sorry. She was like,
I take it back.
And actually, me and my friends laugh about that all the time. How I came over and beat you up with my purse. I should have killed you.
Wow.
What?
for hitting you with a purse.
I should have killed you? Okay. Well, let's talk about the trial. George's trial began 2 years later, in 2012, and he was charged with first-degree murder and second-degree murder, as well as voluntary and involuntary manslaughter, also burglary with intent to commit assault and battery. Slap them with everything. Yes. He pled not guilty, of course.
Right.
Now, Yardley's autopsy painted a very different picture of that night.
Hmm.
This was not
a tussle,
mm-hmm. okay? It was a full-on attack. She suffered blunt force trauma to her head, neck, and all the way down her body to her legs were covered in severe bruising. And she ultimately died of brain injuries, and that's how badly she was beaten.
Oh.
According to trial coverage by ABC News, the brain expert that dissected Yardley's brain said that she was beaten in the head with such force it twisted the blood vessels in her brain.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it was because of that damage to her brain that basically started the death process. You know, her lungs, you know, it shut off the
functions
to her lungs and to her heart. And then it started to shut down her body. The defense tried to paint Yardley's death as a lethal combination of Adderall and alcohol.
No. Okay, how's that going to make your...
Right, how is that going to make you beat yourself up?
Yeah.
But the ME testified that the Adderall in her system was that of someone who was taking the medication for maintenance, which she was.
Mm.
So it was not an excessive amount. It was the correct amount that should have been in her system if she had taken her pill that day.
Mm.
And her blood alcohol level was 0.14, which, while that is twice the driving limit, she wasn't driving. She was walking. And alcohol-related deaths are usually more than 0.40%, which do not include driving. So that kind of level would then start to interfere with your bodily functions.
Okay.
All that to say, it was nowhere near a lethal amount of alcohol. Now, something else that her autopsy revealed was that she was alive. Oh, God, this hurts. She was alive for up to 2 hours after the attack.
What?
And probably died right before her roommate found her.
Well, so no wonder he thought she was still alive when...
Yeah.
When he left.
I can't help but wonder if her roommate would have found her sooner, or if she would have just gone home with Yardley at the time she
If she went home, she could have gotten beat to death.
I don't think he would have done it, or maybe he would have been stopped, or I don't know. It's all the what-ifs, you
right.
know? Now, the prosecution called George's friend to the stand to recount his interaction with George in the moments after he returned to his apartment the night Yardley was killed.
Okay.
He said he was basically practically comatose. He just sat there. There was just nothing there. Like, he didn't blink.
Wow.
He just sat there, stared forward, and when he was like, dude, what's the matter with you? There was just no response. George Hughley was found guilty of second-degree murder and grand larceny. The state couldn't prove the malice aforethought. Mm. I think he went over there and beat the crap out of her, and he is so stupid and immature and self-centered that his little pea brain doesn't realize there are consequences to your actions.
Well, right.
Dave Chapman, the former Charlottesville Commonwealth attorney, put it best in a documentary about this case, and he said, "This isn't an accidental death. It is a result of intentional actions that had unintended consequences."
Thank
he got
you.
23 years for a 22-year-old's life.
Right.
Now, there's no parole in Virginia, so he won't be eligible for parole. But if he's a good little boy, and he participates in good little boy programs in prison, He might be able to reduce his sentence by 15%. You do the math. I'm not a mathematician. Now, the Love family found no solace in this sentence. No. I don't either. Yardley's mother, Sharon, said in an interview that if it was 10 years or 100 years, it makes no difference. It doesn't change the fact that Yardley's gone. She's never coming back. Right. Like, doesn't matter as far as she's concerned. Yardley's family started an organization called One Love that provides education to young women about the dangers of domestic violence. Her mother explained that 16 to 24-year-olds are at most risk of experiencing intimate partner violence. We've done cases, like I said, about domestic violence in the past, but we don't really talk about young people.
The young, yeah.
And how much more vulnerable they might be. You know, we do talk about how women and men get stuck in these domestic situations and they don't have the resources to get out of them. A teenager certainly wouldn't.
Right.
Now, in 2022, just last year, George Hughley, at the age of 34, would see the inside of a courtroom yet again because he was sued by Yardley's mother and sister in a wrongful death suit. They sought $29.5 million in compensatory damages and $1 million in punitive damages. Matthew Green, George's attorney, said basically, look, we'll agree to the compensatory damages. Whatever the jury decides, that's appropriate. But punitive damages, come on. That's not necessary. Like, he was charged. He's been serving time. Like,
wow.
That's the punishment part of it. So during the civil trial, the court saw much of the same witnesses as the criminal trial. George took the stand and testified that that day that would eventually lead to the night of Yardley's murder. He says it was, quote, like a slideshow where 90% of the slides were missing, end quote.
Okay.
He was unemotional and just explained that he didn't remember much of that day and certainly didn't remember beating her to death. But he did take responsibility for his actions and apologized directly in open court to Yardley's mother and sister. And he said, quote, I'm sorry every day. I never meant for anything like this to happen, end quote. I don't believe that he doesn't remember killing her.
No. Mm-mm.
I mean, perhaps he didn't know he killed her.
Right.
Because like I said earlier, he was not thinking about the consequences of his actions. But during his police interrogation that day, he remembered quite a lot.
Right.
He remembered putting his foot through the door and getting injured.
Mm-hmm.
He remembers tussling with her.
And he offered up all that information.
Exactly. He remembers the bloody nose. He remembered how he got there. He remembered what he did throughout the day.
Yeah.
So, oh, and he remembered taking her laptop and dumping it in a dumpster. So, I don't believe that he doesn't remember. Mm-hmm. That's a lie.
Absolutely.
Why lie about that? Just say, I beat her up and I didn't.
Because he thinks people will believe him.
Or just say, I was so drunk. I was so drunk. I didn't know what I was doing. Just say that. Well, George was ordered to pay the Love family $15 million. Mm. Determination on how that will be paid to the family is still up in the air. We know often when a family is awarded that kind of money, they will likely see a portion, if any, of it. But George's attorney said that the Love family could be entitled to 18 cents of George's 55-cent wage from prison.
Okay.
I'm not sure if that's per hour or what, but that's just a third of his earnings. So what does he need two-thirds earnings for? I mean, is he saving up for a car? You know what I mean? Like, what does he need the other...
Snacks, man.
I guess the commissary.
He needs those ramen noodles.
Tattoos. I don't know. Haircuts. I don't know. Do they provide free haircuts in prison? Email us. Cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. I mean, he should have to work the rest of his time in prison and every single penny go to the family. Like, I don't know why he needs 2/3 of it and they get 1/3. I don't get the justification for that. But anyway, Yardley's memory lives on at the University of Virginia. The school has really tried to create a culture of see something, say something.
Okay.
And encourages their students to look out for each other. I can't believe not one of those people, her friends, his friends, is it the bystander effect? I don't know. Is it, oh, well, we thought, you know, Tiffany would say something. We thought Stephanie might say something. And I didn't say anything because I thought it would be reported. Uh-huh. Is it that? Or is it just that nobody wanted to
get involved?
I can't believe not one person didn't report that incident.
Right.
The lacrosse team at the university paints a bridge near campus every year to honor her memory. And they even named the lacrosse field after her.
Aww.
So if you're interested in getting involved in the One Love organization, you can visit their website, joinonelove.org, which I'll link in the show notes. And lastly, if you're experiencing intimate partner violence, or you think your relationship is even headed in that direction, because there are signs, remember, you don't have to have physical violence present to be abused in your relationship. Please reach out for help. Please tell somebody. And if you don't feel comfortable telling somebody, you can anonymously contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233. That's 800-799-SAFE. Or text START to 88788. And you can also visit their website and chat live with someone 24/7. It's free. It's confidential. You can remain anonymous. And if you don't feel comfortable contacting them from your own device, like, because things are really, really bad maybe for you, and you're being monitored, you know, head up to your local library. I mean, hop on their computer, or, you know, there are ways. So I hope you can find the courage to get to safety, and just know that you're not alone, and know that this doesn't have to be your story. Like,
right.
It doesn't have to end badly for you.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you for that reminder. I know we've given those hotlines out before, but it's always good to be reminded. But
yeah,
it doesn't have to be like that. And
yeah, I think of people who get out of those situations and they could easily be our next case. You know, like when you hear about survivors of domestic violence, and you're like, wow, like, how did they even? But it's really, really bad for some people. And then, you know, you have victims who don't want to say anything because of, you know, well-to-do families or, you know, the status or what have you. But everything will be okay.
Yeah.
The dust will settle eventually.
Right. Yeah.
Eventually. People will be mad at you. People will look at you weird. But people won't be looking at you in a pine box.
Exactly.
Buried under the ground. So.
Right. You have to make these choices for yourself.
Yeah. So that's all I got for you for this episode. Rest in peace, Yardley.
Yes. Rest in peace. And let's end it on a good note.
Yeah. Let's do it.
So tell me what you're thankful for.
I'm thankful for, you know what I'm thankful for? Fresh sheets.
Oh.
You know when you put fresh sheets on your bed and you're so tired, like you didn't even want to change your sheets.
Yeah.
But you do. And then you get in bed and you're so thankful that you did.
Yeah.
And you just like spread eagle your legs a couple times, like yeah, starfish in bed a little bit, like rub
like
your legs.
Snow angel.
Yeah. Oh, that's the best. I'm so thankful for fresh sheets. that's that's like a simple thing, but it can really like boost your mood.
I like it.
What are you thankful for?
I am thankful that, so listening to this story about Yardley and how she plays lacrosse, like I am a sporty girl. Mm-hmm. I love sports and I'm thankful that I can still play sports and I play volleyball, co-ed volleyball. I actually did the splits the other day.
What?
I went to dive I went to dive for a ball and my legs just like one went one way and so I thought I was not going to be able to walk the next day, but I'm thankful that I can. So but no, I'm thankful for sports because I love playing.
Well, I won't be playing, but I will be attending.
Oh, you're going to come watch?
Yeah. I used to play with her and it was really embarrassing.
It's fun.
It is fun. It's fun.
So, yeah.
Well, good.
Well, that was good. Let's do it again sometime.
Yeah, let's do it. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next week.
Bye, y'all.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating so that other true crime fans can find us.
If you have any case suggestions or just want to say hey, email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram where we post case photos and information at Cousins on Crime Podcast.